Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, some houses don't reveal their secrets right away. They wait. They listen. They decide when to make themselves known.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Well, hello, and welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Yes, the phone number, if you want to share your ghost story, 855-853-4802. You can do that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you can also write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. Welcome, if you are watching us on YouTube. If you didn't know, you can actually watch us do some of these episodes now on our YouTube channel, Real Ghost Stories Online. Get out there, subscribe, check that out. It's another way to interact too. You can chat about the stories as well on YouTube. So if you want to discuss them, yeah, check that out on our YouTube channel, Real Ghost Stories Online. Hello, everyone. It's Carol. It's Todd. It's me. And
Carol's back. Yay!
Back.
She is back. She's back, everybody. Welcome back. How was your Scientology retreat?
The audits, I didn't do great. I had to buy some more stuff.
And well, so you got to
continue on with my
clearance. You got to hold those cans right with the e-meter. Then you really got to make sure you're telling the truth. And I got to take notes here again. What were you saying about what you did while you were in Spain that might actually be an international incident? I just need to know. It's going to go in a bin. No one's ever going to see it. If you ever say anything bad about us, we're going to stalk you down and we're going to talk about. What did you do with cats in the streets? That's weird.
Where are the naked pictures? Oh,
that's weird. That is weird. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think if I spend some more money, that will be better.
That was established.
Yeah. Okay. So I can move on.
Well, you do want to get to the path to Xenu. So, you know, once you get there, you're going to find
Xanadu.
Out. I think it's Xanadu. Xanadu, Xenu. What was it? What? Then the nuclear bombs go off, and then the Thetans in our bodies all the previous souls of every. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
I was jokingly saying this while we were gone. It really was our I can't believe they're not Catholics tour because we went to so many cathedrals because they're just so historic in the architecture and it's just a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it's quite remarkable, some of these, especially the one in Toledo, Spain. I've never seen anything like that. And I've been to the Vatican, I've been to all of those. St. Peter's, you know, and I don't know why I like to go to Catholic churches, but I
and it was, so you're saying this was more impressive than the Vatican?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, the Vatican itself, that's different because that's more of a museum.
I can't believe it's not the Vatican.
Right. But St. Peter's is incredible. It is incredible, but this is incredible in a way I wasn't expecting. And it was just very over the top. I was like, it's almost like they didn't know when to quit. There's not quite enough going on in the choir area.
Here's the deal. We're going to get that sort of stuff here when we get rid of all labor laws. It's going to be impressive.
I see you doing that with you.
He's weaving. I weave. Yeah.
It's going to be great. Right? It's going to be great.
But it's quite incredible. And so it was a really, really fun vacation. I was very tired when I got home.
I'm glad you got to go. You know, we were in a situation where flights and delays and all that kind of stuff. And I was just worried you weren't going to make it over there.
It was pretty dicey. There was, when I went from Chicago to Washington, D.C., and then my plane left from DC to Madrid.
Yeah.
That I'm on my plane and it's like, we are now boarding. I'm like, shit. And then it's like boarding, pre-boarding, boarding group number one, mm-hmm. boarding group number two. And I'm still on the other plane. I'm like, damn. And so I ended up getting off that plane and I had 10 minutes and I made it. It was just a couple gates down and I made it.
That's what I hate about traveling.
Yes.
Everything else I love, but the actual airport and the worrying about being late and finding your baggage and finding the car and the shuttle and all that. I hate that. I hate
That's exactly what I was just going to say.
Madrid airport was a madhouse. It was really crazy. And so getting in wasn't that bad, but leaving was a lot. It gave me anxiety.
Yeah.
Airports. I got there on time. I don't know how Kathy and she flew from Portland. I flew from here and we set it up so we would get there within 15 minutes. And it actually was more like 40 minutes because my plane was delayed a little bit. So that was good. And we both left on time and we both left within 15 minutes of each other.
Wow. That's cool.
We worked it out.
How would you compare the airports in terms of stuff, restaurants, things to do over there with the American airports?
You know, I was only in the Madrid airport. Okay. I was in several train stations. Mm-hmm. But you know that so many of the airports in the U.S. have been redone over the last 5+ years. So I went into an area of O'Hare. Now, I traveled to Chicago every year. Sometimes I go to Midway. They've done huge improvements to Midway. But I was in a whole new area of O'Hare that I'd never been in. And it was incredible.
Ooh, really?
It was like, this is gorgeous. Like, I can't believe this is O'Hare.
And O'Hare's always been a good one, though. Like,
it's a good one, but now it's even better.
Really?
And so, like, the airports are just so nice. And where I went, we were in the obviously international departure area. It was very nice in Madrid. Mm-hmm. But the process of finding, the same thing happens in O'Hare. It's the checking in.
Yeah.
And getting through security. That can be crazy. And I bet that's no matter where you're at. It's
gonna be at this moment in time, we flew just a couple, like right when the shutdown and all that started. But now a couple of weeks in, and it was already starting to fall apart back then. I don't feel super safe. Like, you got people out, like, you know, if you're not motivated, you're not getting paid, you're not getting a paycheck. Right. It's not crazy to think that people aren't going to be on their A game, you know, and that's no fault to them.
And they're just calling human beings. So they're shorthanded.
Yeah. It's kind of insane.
Because when we landed, I flew from Madrid to Toronto to Chicago. Yeah. So when we got to Chicago, we landed and it was 45 minutes before we pulled up to a gate.
Wow.
And I think that has to do with air traffic control and all that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, they're running this with fewer people, and hats off to the people who are showing up. Like,
oh my God. Yeah.
I completely. You know, but I also get people who don't, like, you might have to go wait tables or something for a while to make some money.
Sure.
If you got kids to feed, you know what? If you got kids to feed, fuck it. It's like, fine. Then I'm going to have to go get a different job. And
But, you know, all the TSA people who are showing up to work, that's incredible.
Yeah, no, it is.
There's a guy here, he was doing the TSA pre-check people and the regular people. He's just running back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah.
And I'm like, thank you for working so hard today.
Maybe that would make Congress a little more motivated to do some sort of shit. Let's take away TSA pre-check when the government shut down. Everybody in the same fucking line.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they haven't.
Everybody in the same fucking line. Because then you're going to have those folks being, oh, this really inconveniences me. Yeah, doesn't it? Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a whole other podcast going into that.
I know. And I'm not saying on either side. I'm just saying get your shit together, everybody. Yep. So
I think you could come together and start working on a compromise. Like,
I think something would
be a good place to start. Like, maybe have the House in session.
I say to both parties, go back
to Washington, D.C., and figure
do your
it
fucking
out.
Job.
Yeah.
Just do your fucking job. Figure it That's out. All. And then don't expect others to do their job if you're not going to do yours, especially when you're the one. Because this is how you know businesses work in this free economy of ours. If I don't do my job, then people below, they don't get paid either. So you shouldn't be being paid and expecting these people to not get paid while you choose not to do your job. That's not how this fucking works. Again, both parties, I'm saying it to everything, everyone, every fucking one out there. I mean, it's insane.
But they should be working every day, you know, 15 hours trying to figure it out.
If you're in crisis mode, you're not like, let me take a fucking month off.
You know? Like, I don't get it.
Like, that's not how this works. Like it doesn't matter if it's a problem that you view that you brought onto yourself or not, or what the fuck ever. If you're in crisis mode, you don't fucking leave till you figure your shit out.
Anyway. Agreed. Couldn't agree more.
Okay.
You just had to get him wild up, didn't you, Kara? Just had to rile him up.
Easy to do. I can't tell if he's calming himself down or if he's...
I am. I learned that from Todd.
Becoming a little demonic. Yep. It kind of is in between.
It's kind of like I'll look down and they'll look up and I'll have red eyes. All right. Ghost story time, everyone. Some houses don't show you who they are right away. They wait. They listen. They get a sense of it, of you, before they decide what they'll let you see. For the first few weeks, the house in Hazel Park seemed almost shy, a little creaky, a little drafty, the kind of modest rental that smelled faintly of pine sol and old wood. It wasn't perfect, but it was good enough. A new beginning for a small family who desperately needed one. It was an early summer when they moved in, her mother, her younger sister, her autistic brother, and her. The air was thick with heat and the sound of cicadas buzzing in the trees as they carried boxes through the front door. Her mother was exhausted but hopeful. The house was older, but it had character. Hardwood floors, an attic hatch in the hallway, ceiling, a porch swing that groaned with every gust of wind. It felt alive in the way old houses do. The first week passed in a blur of unpacking and small discoveries. Drawers that stuck halfway, floorboards that squeaked in unpredictable places, a back door that only locked if you lifted it just right. Her brother liked pacing between his room and the kitchen, running his fingers along the walls and humming under his breath. Her sister complained about the smell of the basement, saying it smelled like rain. It was a house that made itself known quietly. Nothing threatening at first, just present. Then the noises started. They came at night, faint at first, a shuffle in the hallway, a thump in the living room, the sound of someone dragging someone across the floor. She told herself it was the pipes, the house settling, or maybe her brother wandering around. But when her mother mentioned hearing footsteps near her bedroom, she knew it wasn't just her imagination. Even her little sister noticed. One morning she said, "Mom, I heard someone walking in the hallway last night. I thought it was you, but your door was closed." Her mother brushed it off. "Old house, you'll get used to it." But she didn't get used to it. Especially not the attic. The hatch was right at the middle of the hallway, a square of wood framed by ceiling plaster with a pull string dangling like a warning. The first time she noticed it moving slightly, swaying, even when the air was still, her stomach turned cold. She avoided walking directly underneath it, taking wide steps to go around. Something about the space above her head felt watchful and heavy. Then came the night that changed everything. She and her mother were sitting in the living room after the younger kids had gone to bed, talking softly so they wouldn't wake them. The only light came from a small lamp by the couch, its glow spilling halfway into the hallway. And that's when she heard it, slow, deliberate footsteps moving towards them. heel, toe, heel, toe. It wasn't the creak of the floorboards or the sigh of the old house. It was weight, pressure, someone walking. She turned her head sharply towards the hall, her heart thudding in her chest. The hallway was empty, shadows stretching along floorboards. "Did you hear that?" she whispered. Her mother nodded, eyes wide. "Yeah." The sound stopped. They waited, listening so hard the silence seemed to buzz in their ears. For a moment it was gone, then it came again, close this time, heavy steps, steady and slow, as if whoever was making them knew they were being listened to. She didn't hesitate. "Get my sister. Get my brother. We're leaving." Her voice was firm, but her hands were shaking. Her mother didn't argue. And within minutes, they were out the door, half-dressed, pulling on shoes and jackets in the driveway. Her sister, still half asleep, asked what was going on, but she didn't answer. She just said, "Get in the car." They drove around Hazel Park for nearly 2 hours, the city quiet, a half empty yellow streetlight stretching down blocks of silent houses. Her brother stared out the window, humming softly, unaware of the tension. Her mother's hands gripped the steering wheel so tightly her knuckles were white. Finally, her mother said what they were both thinking. "We should go back just to check." She didn't want to. Every nerve in her body screamed no, but the thought of not knowing was worse. When they returned, the house looked perfectly still. The porch light flickered slightly in the humid air. Her mother went in first, checking the bedrooms and the hall. Nothing. The attic was... the hatch had been closed. And she followed, hesitantly stepping over the threshold. And that's what had happened. A single deafening bang exploded directly above her head. It came from the attic. It was so loud, so sharp, that it rattled the windows and sent her heart racing into her throat. She screamed without realizing it, bolting out the front door and down the porch steps in seconds. Her mother ran after her, calling her name, but she was already in the car, shaking uncontrollably. That was the moment her mother decided they weren't staying. They drove to her grandmother's house across town. The familiar smell of lavender detergent and coffee was the first thing that made her feel human again. They didn't sleep much that night, but at least they were safe. For weeks afterward, they stayed there while her mother decided what to do. Eventually, practical concerns went out, leases, deposits, bills, and they went back, but nothing felt the same. The house was quieter, but not in a peaceful way. It felt like it was waiting. Sometimes the kitchen chairs would be slightly out of place. Sometimes she'd wake up and find her bedroom light on, even though she'd turned it off. Once her sister came into her room crying because she heard someone calling her name from the attic, a whispery male voice repeating it over and over. Then there was the night her brother woke, the whole house screaming. When her mother rushed in, she was pointing at the ceiling, shouting, "Make it stop! Make him stop! Looking at me!" He was trembling so hard, he nearly fell out of bed. Her mother searched the attic the next morning, flashlight in hand, and nothing. No animals, no signs of anyone living up there, just dust, cobwebs, and the faint, bitter smell of something that might have once burned. Months later, after they finally moved out for good, she realized the haunting hadn't stayed behind. She was at a friend's house, sitting cross-legged on the floor of her bedroom, laughing about something dumb when she suddenly froze. Her laughter cut off into silence as a cold, invisible grip wrapped around her throat. The pressure was so strong, so real, that her vision blurred. She clawed at her neck, grasping. Her friend screamed for her mother, who came running, but by the time they burst in, the grip was gone. Her neck was red, five distinct marks where fingers should have been. No one had touched her. After that, she started sleeping with the lamp on. She prayed every night. Sometimes she woke to faint tapping at her window, always three knocks, always around 3 a.m. The final straw came when one autumn evening, almost a year after they'd moved out of Hazel Park, she was home alone, folding laundry in her bedroom, when the air suddenly turned cold. Not drafty, cold. Her skin prickled with goosebumps. The light flickered once and then steadied. That's when she saw it. And the reflection of her mirror behind her, near the doorway, stood a figure, tall, dark and still. She turned around, heart pounding, but there was nothing there. When she looked back at the mirror, the figure was closer. She screamed, knocking the laundry basket to the floor and running straight out the front door. She waited in the yard until her mother got home, too afraid to go back inside. That night, she prayed harder than she ever had. She told whatever it was to leave her alone, to go back to where it came from. She said it out loud, voice shaking, tears running down her face. It stopped after that. Not all at once, but slowly. The knocking faded, the shadows quieted, and the air lost that heaviness that had followed her for so long. She still thinks about that house sometimes, how the attic ladder swayed when there was no wind, how the footsteps sounded so real and so deliberate, how a single violent bang from above seemed to come from not the wood or the plaster, but from something angry that wanted them gone. Even years later, when she drives past Hazel Park, she feels a familiar chill crawl down her spine, because some houses don't forget, some just wait. And if you listen closely enough, you can still hear the echoes of boots on old wood, crossing the hallway slow and patient, one deliberate step at a time. Ta-da!
Freaky.
Yeah. Thoughts on that?
You know, I have that fear of something following me. You know, like, I don't want to live in a haunted place or go to a haunted place and have it follow me. And so that would be horrible to live like that. And I did when I was a kid, because a lot of those things happened where I lived. And I felt so relieved to be leaving.
Mm-hmm.
But then that would be horrible if once you left, it was still following you. And you were still having experiences.
Especially if you felt like you were finally safe, you know, after all that time of dealing with it, you run, you know, in our lives, when something bad is in front of you, you turn and you run from it. And usually you get away from it. So to have something that you can't see, can't understand, maybe you can hear, maybe you can kind of sense to follow you, that's got to be really freaky.
And to be a mom, you know, all you want to do is protect your kids and keep them safe. And that makes you feel like you're not able to keep them safe. And what is it? And are your kids safe? And is this your fault somehow? And why is it following you? And you can't even fix it. You know,
right.
Like, how do you reason with something you can't see? It's like, you have to leave my kids alone and me go.
Yeah, that would be maddening. That would be very maddening. Thank you for writing that that letter in. If you'd like to share your ghost story, you can do that. RealGhostStoriesOnline.com is the place where you can share your ghost stories. We would love to hear them. If you'd also like, check out our YouTube page, Real Ghost Stories Online. You'll find us right there. You can watch us doing the show now. And you can also talk about the stories amongst yourselves. Talk amongst yourselves. Go do that, Real Ghost Stories Online on our YouTube channel. And if you want the bonus episodes, advanced episodes, Apple Podcast, or premium channel, or Patreon, just search Real Ghost Stories Online. Until next time, for Todd and Carol, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.